Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast that focuses on the intersectionality of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We focus on how we can amplify the voices of women in STEM and make them aware of the multiple different career opportunities that are available. Welcome to the Women in STEM podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Hi, thank you so much for having me today. I'm Dr. Baldi Ottomans, co-founder of OII by Ottomans Institute, and happy to be on board today.
Can you tell us a bit more about your journey into AI and how your background as a neuroscientist and psychology has influenced your work in the field?
Yeah, that's a good question. So indeed, I did my PhD in cognitive neuroscience quite a long time ago now. And there is a lot of learning, memory, retention, the way people learn and grasp information. A lot of that has come from neuroscience and psychology. And when I started my journey a few years ago now, when we founded the company, we started as a traditional ed tech as such. We were giving training by humans to one-to-one or one-to-many on a variety of topics. And then we scaled to about 9 countries in the scope of a year. And then we faced a bottleneck. We couldn't scale any further because there was not enough trainers. Globally, there is anyway a shortage of 44 million teachers that we need to get by 2030 just to meet basic educational needs. And we face that bottleneck as well in 2020. So what we decided to do then is to see, well, what is as close as possible to human intelligence? And we decided to look at AI, if that could solve a problem. So initially, yes, in January 2021, so before ChatGPT and the like, came sort of in society, we launched the world's first digital human teacher, completely powered by AI. And there's a lot in the way our AI teacher works. There's a lot of psychology and neuroscience behind it in the way it engages with the learner, the way it brings the learner through the journey of the content, as well as there is a lot of human-computer interaction research where also neuroscience and psychology feed into a lot in the product and in AI. So I think in terms of AI, one often thinks about it as computer science and lots of coding and machine learning. And definitely there is a lot of machine learning in AI. I wouldn't disagree with that. In our case, there is a real combination of, maths, computer science, HCI, user psychology, and really looking at it from a user point of view. So we do a lot of research also in the human-centered design sphere, where psychology also plays a big role. So for us, building consumer AI, we're building the AI products and the systems within the psychology neuroscience area, because the user is at the center of everything. So for us, that's where we're coming from when we're also looking at AI.
What inspired you to develop this AI technology, and what impacts do you envision these AI tools having in the future of education?
Yeah, I believe the future of education is going to, well, I don't know if it's going to rapidly change, but I definitely think it's going to change. And we believe also content alone cannot solve the world's education skills gap. There is a big global skills gap in terms of skills, but also things now like AI literacy. And as I mentioned, we have a big shortage of teachers and trainers. So I believe that AI can be working in parallel with humans to augment the learning experience of users, of learners, of students. So, think about also first-time learners. Think about every time you got stuck and you had the content there, whether it was a article you had to read or a video you had to watch or a podcast you're listening to, you will not be able to ask any questions. Your doubts stayed your doubts, and you were not able to clarify those. I mean, you could do some Googling, you can look it up maybe online, but you were still not sure what the answer was. Now you needed a teacher, right? You needed to come back to your human teacher in order to understand your problem and face that bottleneck together. Now, we believe that using AI in there, we can support the learners when they go, for instance, outside of the classroom. And especially with generative AI, which finally understands human language, we can enable that experience. And the same holds true for children. Children also deserve to have a guide and someone who reports back to them during their screen time. And that is, for instance, where our product Teddy AI comes in, where the parent can still be involved in the learning journey of this child, although they are very busy and they have no clue what it is that the children do and what it is that they're learning outside of the time they spend at school. So I think AI can really revolutionize this learning journey, whether you're an employee at a big company and you need to, do your compliance training or your professional development, whether you're a university student, whether you're a younger child going to school. I think AI will play a role in all of these.
What are the biggest challenges you faced in developing an AI-powered educational tool, and how have you overcome them?
That's a good question. I think the lack of available data is one element. And well, now in hindsight, it's quite funny. At the time, we were not laughing. The first version of the teacher we made, so as I mentioned, pre-ChatGPT, we had to all write over, well, I think about 10,000 lines of questions and data to feed it, to train on it. Of course, now we laugh about it, but at the time, it was not funny to keep writing all these lines and questions and training data. So that is definitely a hurdle that now, with obviously much more data is available, and even AI can generate data for you. Also, another element I think when we're looking at AI-powered educational tools is the matureness of the market. So the education of the market as well, and the awareness of AI tools, because the technology is still very new. Although, a lot of us that are in AI will say, well, this has been existing for, AI is not that new. It's been in existence for decades. But the market, education, the sector, for instance, is not necessarily ready for it yet. So there is also a whole piece of awareness and education that one needs to do in terms of our users, our customers. And of course, that's an added time and cost factor when you're working on developing AI technologies.
We're gonna switch gears a bit. I know that you're very passionate about female leadership in tech. So, as a female leader in AI technology, what unique challenges have you encountered and how have you navigated them?
Yeah, that's an excellent one. I'm very, very strong advocate for getting more women into STEM subjects, including, technology as a whole. And for myself, I think it was, I guess, convincing people that coming from a non-technical background, or even the ones that are from a technical background, that AI and technology subjects are more than necessarily STEM, psychology, neuroscience, physics. All, we all need to work together. And often coming, because I came from a neuroscience background, which is still quite technical, it's still very much a STEM subject, but bridging that divide and working as a very diverse team on a technical aspect, I think that was probably the biggest challenge.
What qualities do you believe are essential for effective leadership in the tech industry, especially for women?
I think confidence is a very strong one, a skill to have or quality to have. Openness and kindness for any leader. I think particularly in a tech industry, when you're a female founder or you work, you don't have to be necessarily a founder. I think it's perseverance and resilience. You know what you're talking about. You are a leader in your industry, and that not necessarily comes across in the industry. Females are, there are not that many females in the tech industry. There is still a gap between the number of females that are there, the amount of women that get into the area. So it always feels that one has to prove themselves. And I think with showing resilience and perseverance, one can really become truly effective.
Can you share some of your experiences or a story from your career that highlighted the importance of female leadership in tech?
I think it's partially coming back to what I said before. It's about bringing the diversity in your the way you look at a product. So when we started developing our product, so we have our language large language model, our own language model, OIMISA 7B, which is a fine-tuned language model focused for teaching and learning in particular. And that then plugs into our OI teacher, the AI teacher where one can upload the content. The AI teacher digests it, creates a lesson out of it, and then teaches the learner the lesson, going through that content bit by bit. And after each bit, also quizzes the learner to see did they actually understood what we were talking about. And the learner can ask questions at any time. Now, there's a whole variety of things that come to play when one is designing that. And I believe the importance of female leadership in tech there is, I think, bringing in all these different perspectives, making the marketing person talking to a tech person, to the front end person, to the UI designer. Really bringing all these perspectives together and not having them almost sort of work in isolation.
And with regards to encouraging women to also just get into tech in general, what steps can an educational institution, or an organization take to encourage more women to pursue a career in technology and AI?
Yes, I think if we're looking at education institutions, push or promote, encourage students to take internships, placements, also volunteering roles. I think that's a very big area where students can learn and see whether this field is right for them. When it comes to organizations, it's the same thing. Also offering volunteering roles, offering internships for people to, learn as well and also understand that from the organization perspective, this person is learning here, they're doing an internship with us. One may not expect the same level of qualities or knowledge yet as someone who is a permanent member of staff. And in that internship, really providing a strong learning curve for that person. So when they come out of that internship, they really have a strong idea of what it is to work in technology and AI and where they can see themselves fit and provide mentorship and guidance. I provide a lot of mentorship myself as well to, young female students, mostly from the UK, who are interested but are not sure whether, career in tech is something for them. And, by talking through them, by signposting them, sometimes they share to me or we work together on something, they find out more about it. And often they do join. And an internship can also lead to a permanent position afterwards. So I think that's definitely an area that both organization institutions probably can work more strongly together on to promote these sort of opportunities to people that are interested, particularly women, to pursue these type of careers.
Are you aware of any initiatives or programs that you've been involved with that are helping to inspire women to get into STEM?
Well, something like your podcast, I think, looking a lot at women in STEM, and again promoting that and making people aware of that on LinkedIn. Most universities, as I've seen in the UK, have a women in STEM sort of program, which is really great, but it's often, of course, related to those students that are in an engineering department, and I think that could often be broadened out to those from other disciplines because one can also get into technology without having a very strong STEM background, like for instance, psychology or other areas. I mean, there's lots of groups, I think, as well on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn, where, one can just chat to other people, get to know and, network sort of in your own time. I think that really helps a lot as well. But, podcasts like these, and there's other ones out there as well, is really helpful for people to get a feel of what it is to be a female leader in tech. And hopefully that inspires other people to have a chat with these people and see what it's like and find out more.
And with regards to, it sounds like you've got so much on your plate and you're doing a lot of different things. How do you like manage your time? Do you have any time management skills or tips that you can offer the listeners?
I'm quite good at multitasking. I guess that's one of my good qualities. So that helps a lot with managing. One of the things I would strongly suggest is that one focuses the time on what is really important. I have to-do lists. I will not lie. I have a lot of to-do lists. Do I ever tick all of these things off? No, because the lists keep growing and growing. And I think we can all relate to that. A lot of us make these lists or sticky notes or whatever system you have. One of the things we do within our organization is we set weekly sprints, which is very familiar in people in the tech and in the developing world, and maybe not so much for people in the non-tech world. It's where at the beginning of the week, we set the target. And that is a target we all as a team work towards for that week. And everybody has their part to play. The tech team has to do stuff, the marketing team, the research team, the operations team, the sales team. We all have a piece to play in that puzzle. And throughout the week, we keep each other updated of where we are. And if we hit any blockers or challenges, which usually there are, nothing goes really smoothly usually. That's just the way life is. We support one another to ensure that at the end of the week, we have hit that target. And not doing too many things is really helpful to manage your time because then you can focus on the things that are really important. Because we always feel we have to do this now. We have to do everything now. It's not possible. So we focus on the things that are important for that week. And if something cannot be done that week, if it's not part of that target, then it's fine because that was not the aim of that week. So that's definitely a system, I encourage people to follow because it really helps you focus on what is really important at the time.
Yes, time management is a very crucial skill, especially if you're wanting to go into leadership. With regards to the future of AI and teaching, I know AI has gotten a lot of coverage over these past couple of years, but how do you foresee AI evolving in the educational sector over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I wish I could look into the future and see if my answer is correct already. I think personal tutors and teachers sort of, they will still be there, but they will become sort of the mainstay. And then you have hybrid learning, which will really become the norm, just like we're hybrid working, right? We are very flexible often in the way we can work nowadays after the pandemic. We have really picked up a few good points on that, and hybrid working is one of them, where I think we'll have very distinct in-person time in the classrooms, for instance, with the human teachers. And we also do a lot of remote learning. But when we do that remote learning, we're not just reading some text, we're not just looking at a video, we're working through that content with an AI teacher. And the human is always in the loop. So the human can check, what is the AI going to provide to my student? Is this content correct? Do I want to change an example? Do I want to change the tone? What is the AI going to quiz my students about? I think for this particular topic, scenario-based questions is the best. So I ask that from the AI, not just multiple choice or true false. No, we need a different type of question here. And then when my learners have gone through the content with that AI, I, as the human teacher, get all that data back to see, well, my learners were really doing well, or they were not doing well. They really did not understand concept one and concept two. So when I have that in-person time with them, I can really focus on the things that I've seen my learners were struggling with, whether it was due to their not being able to answer the question the AI was asking them, but also what questions were they asking the AI. And through that, I get all that data back as a report. I can then fine-tune my in-person time with them to make most of the time and really personalize those learning journeys for each and every individual student, because everybody is a unique individual who learns at a different pace and different way. So I think, yeah, I think that that's what's happening in the in 5 to 10 years. If AGI happens or near AGI, I think then we may get a different system where maybe all of that knowledge is obviously there, and then maybe then what teachers do may fundamentally change. But for, the next few years, I really believe that hybrid learning will really become the norm.
You touched on the next question actually quite briefly. With AI and its popularity, there's also been a lot of skepticism that has come along with it and people being afraid of certain aspects of AI. So I wanted to know if you could speak briefly on what are some of the ethical considerations you will be taking into account when integrating AI into education.
Yeah, I think there are mainly two things. One is data. I mean, data is key. We use data sort of all the time to make decisions, but we need to ensure that the data is not biased. And at the moment, of course, there is still a lot of bias when it comes to AI, or hallucinations also exist. So we always need to focus on debiasing our data, especially the data the AIs are being trained on. But of course, we also need to think any human data also has some bias. So I think debiasing data is something that we really need to look for when we're integrating AI into education. And the other key focus is sort of ethical AI and making AI accessible to all. And this is something we are constantly working on. For, I have two examples on that, is multi-language ability. There are a lot of learners there, maybe English is not their first language, but their schooling system is in, if they're going to the UK, it will be in English. So they may struggle with the content just because their language is not at par potentially with what it needs to be. And doing multi-language ability can also help a lot for these learners to continue their learning journey, and also being not afraid to ask questions, being motivated and keep getting encouraged to learn. So I think that's where AI can also play a role, because it's much easier to switch between languages, although one often has to train the data again on that particular language because the translation layer doesn't always work. And the other one is focusing on edge AI versions, where part of the computation happens on the person's own device. So in that case, it doesn't have to go back up and down, so to speak, to our servers, but a part of it will take place on the person's own device, which helps with the privacy of the data that the user is providing to the AI. But of course, it will also improve the user experience in terms of the latency will reduce, and for the organization, obviously, the cost would be reduced. And that's something we're looking to release later this year, which again is something I think one can take into consideration when looking at ethical issues.
Can you discuss any ongoing research or upcoming projects you're excited with regards to the realm of AI in education?
So I think, yeah, the launching a product as an edge product is something we're really excited about. So as I mentioned, this means that our large language model will then run on your own device or your mobile phone if you're learning with our AI teacher on your phone, which we know a lot of our learners do. And this will, as I mentioned, enable better user experience because there's lower latency. You have better privacy because your private data stays on your device and doesn't go to the cloud where we could access it. And also for us, it's better because the cost would be lower. Which, because now partially will run on the phone. I think that's one great project we are very excited about. And another one I would say is, I'm also quite excited about the multi-language capabilities and how very quickly, in a matter of weeks, we can now change our entire AI from English to Spanish. That's one thing we've already done, and now we're looking to expand to other languages as well, taking sort of one language at a time, because as I mentioned, each language has to be retrained, and each model has to be retrained in that language in order for it to launch as a product. So that's something as well that's quite exciting.
It's been great speaking to you, and I really enjoyed our conversation. I feel like I've learned a lot of things. I feel like I feel much more comfortable with the idea of AI in education. How best can people get in contact with you?
You can go to our website, oiedu.co.uk. But if you just want to drop us an email and ask us any question, whether that's research, we are also opening for our first external funding. So if anybody wants to wish us on their journey and invest, please email us on founders@oiedu.co.uk.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you've enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite streaming platform, leave a review and rating to help us reach more listeners, and follow our social medias, the latest updates and behind the scene content. Join us next week for another exciting episode. And until then, keep exploring the world of STEM and empowering women in STEM.